Hello, once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. This is BangTheBook.com's MLB betting podcast for Monday, July 30th. I'm your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up over at DSI using that promo code BANG200. You'll get 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. If you haven't had a chance to check out their redesigned format, things are looking great over there at DSI, so we certainly recommend that you check them out. Monday-Thursday format continues here for this week. I'm still trying to figure out what my plans are going to be for next week. I'll let you know as soon as I do. Probably that will be by the Thursday show, so I'll be able to let you know when it comes to that. Monday mailbag still going on at Skating Tripods or Adam at BangTheBook.com. And even when we get to the daily shows, you know, I don't know when I'll be doing the Bettors Box necessarily. I'll have to see what our guest lineup looks like. But we'll still do Monday mailbag. Well, we'll still do mailbag questions. It doesn't have to be a Monday. If you ever have questions for me, for any of our guests, never hesitate to reach out. Again, Adam at BangTheBook.com to send those in. And, you know, I love chatting with our guests about listener questions and some of the different thoughts and concerns that you guys have out there. So please let me know and we'll make sure to get those out there in front of our handicappers, or I'll answer them for you depending on the day of the week. My picks and tips piece still available every day at bangthebook.com. If you subscribe to notifications over there on the site, you already know that because you get the notifications for that picks and tips piece. All 130 college football teams have been previewed. All 32 NFL teams have been previewed. We've got a great article from Ed Fang with his Wisdom of Crowds model for the upcoming NFL season. Alan Moody is going to be working on the team preseason previews. We'll have NBA team previews coming out here very soon. MLB, WNBA, golf, UFC, NASCAR, you name it, we got it over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. And sometime today or maybe tomorrow, we'll have a special announcement from one of our contributors about one of the upcoming seasons, and we're certainly looking forward to that. FootballContest.com should be your proxy service for the Westgate Super Contest or the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. We're all signed up for those, two in the traditional, one in the gold, one in the nugget. So we'll be able to talk about those a lot here on Bang the Book Radio as we go forward. But Maddie and Tony do a fantastic job over at FootballContest.com. We love them. They've taken good care of us. They'll definitely take good care of you. Speaking of contests, those contests kick off again here in a couple of days for the monthly contest. If you're playing the Daily Streaker, obviously it doesn't matter what day of the month it is, you can continue to get involved in that. Cash prizes available. You sign up with an email address, you get our daily newsletter, then you get access to those contests like the Daily Streaker, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Again, cash prizes available for those, and we should have our Bang the Book Super Contest going on once again this year as well. Finally, one other very important announcement before we get into today's show. We are now on Spotify, so you can find Bang the Book Radio on Spotify. Subscribe, download, listen, stream. Very good, very, very good for those of you that like to use Bluetooth in your car and listen to the show. So you definitely can find us on Spotify now. We've been on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Podbean, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker. We're all over the place, but now we've been added to Spotify, so we're very excited about that. Very easy and convenient to get all of the episodes of Bang the Book Radio right there on your mobile device or on your computer. So just go to Spotify, search Bang the Book. It's going to be the only result that you find. So, you know, good opportunity to check out our shows using that medium. All right, format for today. Got a couple of Monday mailbag questions for you. Then we'll go beyond the box score down the lines. I'll give you a pick for tonight's action and then preview the rest of the week. And obviously, with the Major League Baseball trade deadline coming up on Tuesday, the rest of this week could certainly be very interesting. I'll try to keep one eye on everything that's going on in case we get any sort of breaking trades like we had last week with the Brad Hand deal that came out pretty much as I was wrapping up the show. So, you know, we'll see if we get any kind of breaking news here during the program. But we'll go ahead and start with the Monday mailbag segment. A couple of good questions here. And, you know, just for future reference here, like I said, these don't have to be baseball questions. These Monday mailbag questions can be about beer, whiskey, Vegas, football, hockey, basketball, baseball, music. I don't really give a shit. I just want you to send in those questions, and we'll talk about whatever comes across the wire here on the program. But a good question from Jack via email says, how do you split up your bankroll? I want enough money in each account to make daily wagers and fire on some season win totals and futures, but I would prefer to have as much money in my bank account as possible. I also need to have enough money on hand to withstand a losing streak. Should I be worried about not being able to get cashed out? No, absolutely not. The sports books, you know, they police themselves. And also with legalization happening in so many states in the United States, it's you know, already obviously in New Jersey and Delaware and certainly Nevada, Mississippi starting up here very soon, Pennsylvania and West Virginia going to follow shortly thereafter. You know, places like Iowa moving very quickly as well. A lot of states getting involved now. And what that's going to do is, in a roundabout way, it's going to be more of a watchdog for the offshores, because the biggest appeal, I would say, to being able to bet within your own state is convenience. You know, you take money, you cash your ticket, you get your money. A lot of people don't like to send that money offshore, get a little bit concerned about, you know, how secure some of these transaction processors are and things like that. The sports books are going to be under the microscope a little bit more, at least the offshore ones, in terms of making sure that they pay out their people. You know, we saw a huge to-do with the FanDuel sportsbook at Meadowlands Racetrack in New Jersey, where the book closed, an extra innings game finished up, and they weren't able to pay people. They were paying with what they could, but they couldn't get access to the vault to pay off some of the customers that were still holding tickets. Those people had to come back the next day in order to get paid out, and it was a big deal. It was a huge thing, especially in the infancy of this in states like New Jersey and Delaware. You know, obviously, in Nevada, you're not going to run into that problem, but you know, this is something that's going to be under the microscope. So if you've got offshores that aren't paying out, you're going to see a lot more coverage of that with some of the sites that are out there. And of course, with some of the review sites like ours and things like that. So you know, don't ever worry about anything like that. You will get your money. It may take a little bit of time. Sometimes there are some wires that get crossed because a lot of these places use third-party processors and, you know, enhanced security measures and all that type of stuff. Sometimes it does take a little bit longer than it should, but no, you should never worry about not being able to get your money. Now, of course, that being said, there are some people that have some horror stories out there. I certainly sympathize with them. But for the most part, you know, those are few and far between situations. In any event, to the original question here, how do you split up your bankroll? And again, a lot of times these questions are difficult to answer because there really is no concrete answer for them. It depends on how liquid you need it. It depends on how much you're going to play from a futures or a season win total standpoint, and then how much you're going to need for daily wagers. So as kind of a general across the board rule of thumb, I guess I'll say, for one thing, I would recommend a cross section of books. I think it's valuable to have a public book, like a MyBookie, like a Bovada, especially when it comes to football season. When it comes to baseball, you're not going to get a whole lot of value out of it because books have the 20-cent line. So you can still get a plus 140, you know, on a minus 150 favorite, you know, or minus 160 favorite in a lot of different places. You know, the 20-cent lines don't really help you a whole lot. But you're probably going to be able to find things like a plus 8 instead of a plus 7, you know, a 6.5 instead of a 7.5 in football season, something like that. So I do recommend having at least one public book as part of your repertoire. Then a reduced juice book or a dime line book. Generally, these are one and the same. You certainly want those. You want those books that can really increase your profit potential because they're willing to go with the reduced juice options, something like Five Dimes, something like Bet Online, and then something that's a combination of those two things, something that's kind of public but kind of sharp, you know, has very competitive lines, has reasonable lines. You know, this would be a very good book, like a DSI, where they've got a very balanced clientele, kind of a jack of all trades type of book over at DSI. One of the reasons why we have aligned ourselves with them is because it is a book that can cater to a lot of different people. You know, for Five Dimes, they take the most risk and the most exposure when it comes to futures. They generally have some of the best prices that are out there in the futures market. You give up your bonus opportunity if you choose to have reduced juice over the life of your account. So you kind of got to weigh the risk reward there of how much that matters to you. You know, if you're a futures player, maybe you want to take that bonus. If you're playing a lot of daily stuff, maybe you want to take that reduced juice. What about player props? If you like betting player props, BetOnline probably has the best player props section that's out there right now. They put in a huge interface a couple of months ago to where you can make a lot of different player prop betting options. So those are very good for you. You know, again, You want to make sure that you've got a cross section of books where you've got some versatility, you've got a lot of options, you've got a lot of opportunity. Now, for splitting up your bankroll, you don't want to have a lot of it at the public book. You're going to have opportunities to get, maybe the team playing the Patriots at a better number or something like that, team playing the Steelers at a better number, but you're not going to use that book a whole lot. So maybe you put 20 to 25% of your bankroll, something like that, maybe even just 10% of your bankroll, but you want to have that option available to you. Maybe you want to go with a 45-30-25 split or a 40-40-20 split, something like that, where you have your primary books, a Five Dimes and a Bet Online along with a DSI, something like that. You want a good amount of money at those. So maybe you put 40% of your bankroll at each one of those, 20% at that public book. Maybe you go 45-45-10, because you're not going to make any futures plays at a public book. There's just no value in playing the futures market at a Bovada or really a MyBookie for that matter, something like that. It is what it is. Some books are more willing to take on futures risk than others. Maybe you've got the occasional win total play. You've got a team like Houston or New York or something like that really pumped up in a public book. Yeah, you can maybe look to go against the grain and take an under there. But for the most part, you're going to be looking to play dogs and unders in football season going against those really public types of teams. That's what you'd want to do at one of those public books. And then, of course, you want to make sure that you've got part of your bankroll separated for futures. So maybe you take 10% of each bankroll at the primary books, maybe a couple percent at one of the public books, just so that you've got some money there to play with from a futures standpoint. The important thing here is you want to treat these accounts like an investment portfolio. You want to be diversified. You want to make sure that you have the opportunity to take advantage of some of those bad numbers that are out there or some of those inflated numbers that are out there. But you also want to be heavier with positions. They're going to be more cost efficient, probably give you a better ROI. You want to track your plays. Are you somebody that plays a lot of dogs? Well, then you certainly may want to do 15% at a public book. Do you play a lot of favorites? Well, you want to limit what you have at a public book if you're playing a lot of favorites. Consider the sports books that are out there. Consider their clientels. All of these books are trying to manage risk based on the betting habits of their players, of their clientels. So, depending on how you align as a bettor, you want to make sure that you're at a sports book or two that are favorable to the positions that you expect to take. So again, I think a 45-45-10 or a 40-40-20 split, something like that would be beneficial to you because then you've got money to spread around. You've got opportunities to go out there and take advantage of the best numbers. And that is something that you really want to look to take advantage of. And again, use those bonus offers. We've got the Bang 200 at DSI, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino. You've got the BTB 100 at GT Bets. 100% deposit bonus up to $500. Also, GT Bets will give you a free half point when you select your favorite teams when you create an account. So all these little perks could be beneficial for you. Do you like to bet on your favorite team? GT Bets is giving you a free half point. Do you like the reduced juice? Can you live without the bonus? Go to Five Dimes. Do you like the player props? Go to Bet Online. And of course, we've got a good Bet Online deposit bonus at bangthebook.com as well. So it's very important to shop around, to know what you're getting into, to, these are important things. This is the betting side of this equation. The handicapping side is in the breaking down, in evaluating the data, in reading into the numbers, in looking for those edges. That's the handicapping side. The betting side is the part that a lot of people tend to struggle with. That's the separator. That's what makes it so hard to be a long-term winner here, allocating your bankroll properly, getting the best numbers that are out there. We'll talk about that here in a couple of minutes with our second Monday Mailbag question. But these are important things. You can handicap a game with the best of them, but are you putting yourself in a position to succeed by having optimal bankroll management, by using that 3-4-5% system or a fraction of the Kelly criterion, something like that? These are very important things. This is the stuff that separates the really good bettors from the decent bettors who are good handicappers. There's nothing worse than handicapping a game correctly but not winning because you fall on the wrong side of variance because you took a bad line or you take a line late in the week and could have had a better number earlier in the week. These are all things that are very important. And these bankroll management techniques are critical. They are essential. So to wrap up here for the too long, didn't listen version of this, 40-40-20, 45-45-10 across three books. Maybe you want to have more books than that. Maybe you want four or five. Makes sense. You know, give yourself as many opportunities as possible, as many as your bankroll can withstand. Pay attention to how many futures you want to play, how liquid you need your bankroll on a daily basis, and then put money down at those sports books accordingly. And then, of course, you know, make sure that you've got a cross section of books to where you can take advantage of a lot of the different odds that are going to be out there, not just during baseball season, but during football and basketball and hockey seasons as well. Richard Lammons, contributor to bangthebook.com. He's been fantastic for us. He's done some great work with NFL season win totals for the NFC South, and then also with Big 12 college football season win totals. And we hope to have him with something weekly here during the upcoming football season. But good question here. Do you think it is worthwhile to record the opening and closing number for any game where I make a play? I'm reworking my worksheets that I track all my plays in preparation for the upcoming season. I always track my play and what number I have, and I always pay attention to the line movement for the game, even after I've made a play. My thought with this is to see if I'm constantly ahead of any line movement or if I need to look at making a play earlier in the week to ensure a better number. The other aspect of this is, what source should I use? If you want to take this really seriously, and I know that Richard does, and I've had some email conversations with him back and forth, and I know that he is a sharp guy. If you want to take this seriously, I recommend tracking all your bets, and I recommend tracking the line moves as well. You have to constantly evaluate your portfolio. This is part of that betting side of things. Tracking your results, tracking any tendencies that you have, seeing when you're hitting the market, seeing if you should be hitting the market earlier, maybe seeing if you could wait a little bit longer. These are important things. Those half points and full points matter. They really, really do. So you want to make sure that you are tracking the market. And you know, look, if you really like a game and that line goes down, put more on it. If you really like the game that much, put some more on it if that line gets into a more favorable position for you. Now, that being said, one of the things that's a little bit challenging here about this with, in terms of recording the opening and closing number, is that openers are tricky to figure out. BetOnline generally opens first, but these are only available to people that have BetOnline accounts. They're only $500 limits, and they move very, very quickly. They move extremely quickly. You will see 7, 8, 9-point line moves, particularly in the totals market, when BetOnline starts to open these numbers. So what is the opener? What is the true opener? To me, I think it's a consensus number after some of those initial hits have set the market. You know, and we'll see BetOnline hang a bad number, get blasted for it, and then a different book opens, like a Five Dimes or a Bookmaker or something like that, and then all of a sudden they're matching that number. So, you know, you want to look for a book that's widely respected, a book that's going to be taking some kind of decent limits on those openers that are out there. You know, think about the Wynn openers out in Las Vegas, and there's a certain number of guys in line, and somebody might bet 3.5 at the open. Everybody else is picking up the scraps at 4.5 or 5 because it only takes one hit. You know, of course, at the Wynn, they know faces. You know, if you're somebody who's consistently beating the market, consistently beating the book, your action's going to get more respect. So the offshores do this too. You know, they have their accounts flagged. They have a lot of tracking systems, stuff like that. So one of the things that I think is very important here is understanding what the opener actually is. The opener is not the BetOnline number, because only a certain number of people can get those one or two hits at a max limit bet on a BetOnline opener. That's not really an opener anymore because one person had access to it. So to me, the opener is you kind of let the dust settle. For example, for college football, I think the opener is what the line looks like on Monday morning or really late Sunday night when all of the market has opened. Now, the closing line is also pretty interesting because we've seen a lot more significant game day sharp line movement over the last couple of years than we saw over the previous several years. A lot of times it used to be, well, you got to get out in front of the market and, you know, you hit the openers and then you hit something middle of the week. And then on game day, you just kind of let the public bettors beat the number around and kind of pick up what's left out there. But we're seeing a lot of game day line moves from really, really respected money. So it makes the closing lines rather interesting as well. You know, and obviously, I think at this point, we're kind of getting to the point now where the closing line is almost the truest line that we're going to see, because all the money is out there and we're seeing those sharp groups hit those numbers very hard on game day. Used to kind of be, well, maybe the night before you kind of want to look at it as the true line, because a lot of professionals have already gotten in. The public bettors, the less informed bettors are going to come in on game day. You know, maybe that doesn't mean as much, but the dynamics have really been changing a lot within this industry over the last several years. And one of those biggest changes has been the significance of line moves on game days. So you want to follow the openers, but you don't want to get to open the market. You probably want to look at something like a bookmaker. Pinnacle would be another good one. But of course, if you're not somebody who was grandfathered in at Pinnacle, you can't have an account there. So tracking openers and closers for a book that you don't have access to doesn't really make a whole lot of sense in my estimation, even though Pinnacle is the absolute sharpest offshore book that's out there, along with Matchbook, the offshore exchange where you trade numbers with people and the house takes a commission. Very interesting concept there. That tends to be a very sharp book as well, because it's basically like you're, you know, just kind of trading commodities and futures there. But you know, I think Bookmaker probably still the most respected among the books open to U.S. players. Pinnacle would be the sharpest offshore, but again, tracking openers and closers in a book that you can't access those numbers doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So, you know, yes, I think it's very important to do this. And one of the primary reasons why is because the best predictor of future success comes from beating the market. I'll say that again. The best predictor of future success comes from beating the market. And this is really simple logic, in all honesty. If you're getting better numbers, you have better probabilities of winning those games. If you're on the right side and you're getting good numbers, that's a good sign for future success. So you do want to track these things because you want to see if you are getting out in front of the market, if you are getting a good number. And like I tell people all the time on this show, look, I got listeners that do 9-to-5s. I got listeners that do shift work. I got listeners that do graveyard shifts. I have listeners that, you know, maybe do this a little bit more seriously than others. Some people do it as a second income. Some people do it as a supplement. Some people do it to have fun. Whatever the reason is that you're betting, I'm glad you're listening to the show, and I wish you all kinds of success. But if you are somebody who's working a 9-to-5 with limited access, you've got a wife and two or three kids, maybe you don't have a whole lot of time to sit there staring at the market, get the best number that you can. Just don't always settle for the worst of the number. Don't always settle for what the closing number is. Get something better than what the closing number is, and I think you can have success. If you're somebody who can watchdog the market all day, yeah, you want to be trying to get the best possible numbers. But those resources aren't available to everybody. Getting the best number isn't always – the best number may be that bet online opener, you know, at 5 o'clock on Sunday – where a team opens -1 and that number closes -8 market wide, and it didn't open any lower than -6 anywhere. Yeah, you got the best number, congratulations, but nobody had access to that number except for basically you. So yeah, you got the best number, but you know, you were the only person that had access to it. So is that really the best number? No, not really. So again, the betting side of this is the really complicated part. Knowing when to hit the market, using your bankroll properly and optimally, bet sizing, very important as well. These are the things that separate, you know, people that can handicap a game from people that can make money in this industry. So two very good questions in that regard here today. And hopefully, you know, I didn't go too far in depth with those two questions. But again, they are very important things. These are very important concepts. I know you're here to get baseball betting information and, you know, hear what I have to say, my analysis on what happened and looking at the future and all that. But these are also very important things. And especially with football season coming up, it's almost like this is a good segue into football season and not doing the bettors box every day, because these are concepts that we talk about on every one of those daily radio shows. Yeah, we break down games. Yeah, we look at matchups and we talk about line moves and things like that. But these are important building blocks for you as a bettor, for you as a handicapper. They're going to make you a better handicapper too, because you're going to understand the market better and understand where some of these line moves are coming from. So two very good questions. And again, Adam at bangthebook.com or at Skating Tripods if you ever have questions. Again, they don't have to be about betting, but you know, obviously those play a little bit better here on the program. All right, let's go ahead and go beyond the box score here. Let's talk about this national split with the Marlins. And this series was not good enough for the Washington Nationals. They're six back of the Phillies and the wild card. They're only up seven on the Mets and the Marlins. So they're sitting dead center in the National League East here. And when you score 19 runs on 29 hits in the first two games of this series and then give away the other two games, you have to win this series. If you're in the position that Washington is in and you get the first two games and you get that offense going and then you score one run on seven hits in games started by Trevor Richards and Jose Urena, that's a problem. Five errors in this series for Washington. Look, the underlying metrics point to improvement. They are plus 38 in run differential with a sub 500 record. That's even better than Philadelphia, who's in first place in this division. But sometimes there are years where teams that have a lot of talent just aren't good teams. And it is what it is. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. And for Washington here, they could still win this division. They could still get hot. They could still do very well in their head-to-head matchups against Philadelphia and Atlanta. That is a very possible thing. But we're 105 games into the season here. And at some point, you just kind of have to accept who you are and what you are. And right now, like the Nationals, just aren't a very good team. And so we'll see if they do wind up selling. We'll see if they do try to capitalize on Bryce Harper. I think part of it is that they feel like if they traded somebody like a Bryce Harper, you know, you would be on the outside looking in to re-sign him. I don't even know if they want to re-sign him. But they have some bullpen pieces that they can move. They have some part-time players they can move. I think a guy like Michael Taylor is a great fit for the Indians because he's a good defensive outfielder, and they really don't have any at this point. So we'll see what the Nationals decide to do, but this can't happen. You cannot score 19 runs on 29 hits in the first two games, win both of them comfortably, and then score one run in the next two games. It just can't happen, and it did. And that's kind of a microcosm to me of what it feels like is going on with the Washington Nationals here so far this season. Now, of course, credit goes to the Miami Marlins. Very scrappy. Good for them for battling back. You know, they blew a save in that 2-1 win on Saturday, came back, won the game in extra innings anyway. Their bullpen will probably fall apart here over the next couple of, or the next day and a half. They have a lot of highly sought after relievers. I think Derek Dietrich, who batted leadoff in this series, will probably get traded. Cleveland could be a destination for him as well. But they're battling, and you got to give them a lot of credit for that. But still, this series is more about what it says about the Washington Nationals, and what it says is that they are not good enough, at least not right now. They are not good enough. Don't let Sean Newcomb's near no-hitter distract you from what happened in this Dodgers and Braves series. This was the only game in the series that the Braves won. Took a phenomenal performance from Sean Newcomb, who there was a buy side next to Sean Newcomb. We took a piece of him yesterday. Glad we were able to get that winner. But the Braves lost the first three games of this series. They only scored eight runs in this series overall, four in Sunday's game, four in the first three games. Anibal Sanchez ran into some regression in game one. Rich Hill was great. They got shut down by Clayton Kershaw in game two, shut down by Alex Wood in the bullpen in game three. Took advantage of a little bit of Ross Stripling regression in game four, but the Braves, it was not a good look for them in this series. And this is a team that has done very well against left-handed pitchers most of the season in 20 and a third innings against Rich Hill, Clayton Kershaw, and Alex Wood. 10 hits, one run, five walks, 21 strikeouts. So, look, the Dodgers are better than most of the teams that the Braves are going to play. It is what it is. I understand that. I understand that you're kind of comparing them, you know, in a vacuum here against a team that is better than them and against a team that, after the slow start to the year, has been one of the best teams in baseball. You know, they got Manny Machado. It lengthens their lineup so much. But, you know, this was a series here where I think it was kind of a dose of reality for Atlanta. Now, again, they're not going to play many teams as good as the Braves the rest of the way. The AL East is, you know, Philadelphia is a solid team, but we just talked about Washington. The Mets and Marlins are both bad. Marlins are going to get worse once their bullpen gets picked apart here at the trade deadline. So, you know, maybe this is a little bit of an overreaction for the Braves, but offensively, they've had some problems here of late. And with the pitching staff right now, now Newcomb threw 134 pitches. He's going to get extra rest. Max Fried is already in the rotation right now. Julio Teheran is not great. Mike Foltynewicz is still pitching very well. But Anibal Sanchez, if he regresses, you know, the Braves are kind of in a little bit of a precarious spot. They do have three games in hand on the Phillies. They're a game and a half out, but all of those games in hand need to be wins for them. They're a game and a half out in the wild card. But, you know, everyone talking about Sean Newcomb and the no-hitter, but don't let it distract you from the fact that the Dodgers won the first three games in this series. And that probably says more about the Dodgers than it says about the Braves, and I've had a buy sign on the Dodgers for quite a while now. They're going to win that division. You know, I know the Rockies are playing well. I know the Diamondbacks are kind of, you know, still up and down and kind of living on the great start that they had to the year. The Dodgers are going to win that division. So if there's a futures price out there that you like, if you haven't taken one yet, as you know, I already hedged against my Diamondbacks plus 600 ticket with the Dodgers minus 160. There's still value in taking the Dodgers to win that division, and how they looked in this series, how Rich Hill and Clayton Kershaw looked in this series, big reasons why. The Colorado Rockies swept the Oakland A's, so the A's finally getting slowed down by somebody. Kyle Freeland with six shutout in the opener. Antonio Senzatella, 5 2/3 of pretty decent work on Saturday. Germán Márquez shoved in the finale. He was terrific. The Rockies only scored 10 runs in this series, and they've been living on their offense. Their offense has been very, very good. The pitching staff was terrible in June, has been very good in the month of July. Their true talent level kind of falls somewhere in between. But you know, for Colorado here, very impressive, strong bullpen. Brian Shaw gave up the only relief run in this series for the Rockies, and Brian Shaw has had a very rough year. Maybe that workload for his five seasons in Cleveland kind of taking its toll. But for Colorado to score 10 runs in a home series and sweep it, very impressive. High marks to the Rockies here for this one. You know, Sean Manaea gave up three runs over five in the first game, allowed nine hits, so some BABIP progression kind of hitting there a little bit. If you're going to slip up as Oakland, though, good time to do it because the Mariners hitting some of their regression. They're only 7-12 in their last 19. So for the A's, you just kind of sweep it off, get back home, get back to what you were doing. You ran into a team playing as hot or maybe even better than you were. It happens. Let it go. The Rockies get a buy sign next to them, and especially Márquez, who was very good in that finale. I think he's a guy we can ride for a little bit here to some victories. The Texas Rangers swept the Houston Astros. The Astros have dropped four straight. Jose Altuve now on the disabled list. But all 19 meetings between the Rangers and the Astros already have been completed. So those two teams will not see each other again this season. And this feels like a case of overlooking an opponent. You know, Houston was 12-4 in the season series going into this one. They committed five errors in this series, only scored eight runs, 1-for-18 with runners in scoring position. Astros bullpen gave up 13 runs. We've talked about that a little bit here, where if you've got some really good bullpens and they're pitching in games where they're trying to keep it close, sometimes it doesn't really work out that way. You don't have that same level of intensity as you would protecting a lead. So sometimes it can be a good time to live bet against those teams. That was the case a little bit here in this series. And look, credit to the Rangers, but to me, this is just a case of the Astros overlooking an opponent. You know, again, 12-4 in 16 meetings coming into this season. They beat the shit out of the Rangers last year because the Rangers did that to them a couple of years ago. So that's all this was to me. I would not read anything into this at all whatsoever. The Astros are still a very good team, and we'll talk about them a little bit more later on in the program. Milwaukee Brewers taking the first three from the San Francisco Giants. They scored 22 runs in four games at AT&T Park. Flat efforts from Jeremy Jeffress and Corey Knebel on Thursday, but a good Chase Anderson start on Friday. Chase Anderson's one of those guys, the metrics suggest regression, but he's pitching well. He's been pitching well now for about 6 weeks' time. Ever since he came off the DL, he went on the DL with an illness, and I don't know if that was, hey, let's get this guy right, or maybe there was some sort of lingering sickness there. But since he came back off the DL, he's been very, very good. He's cut down that home run rate significantly. Chase Anderson's swinging into a guy to back right now. And, you know, for the Brewers overall, I think it's kind of set in a little bit what I've been talking about with Milwaukee throughout the season. They've got some guys with those ERA to xFIP discrepancies, but they just don't allow a lot of hard contact. They don't allow a lot of home runs. The market may be kind of figuring that out now. Maybe I've driven the point home enough that it's kind of spread like wildfire. But, you know, we saw money come in on Chacin, on Julius Chacin, in his last start. So, you know, again, a guy with an ERA to xFIP discrepancy, maybe it was a fade of the Giants, and I could certainly understand that. But the market's finally realizing this Brewers rotation probably not going to regress the way that the metrics suggest. So that's an adjustment that you may need to make as well. One other guy I want to touch on here, Johnny Cueto. Four innings in this series in his start, I believe it was on Saturday, faced 18 batters, didn't strike out any of them, and only had three swings and misses. Johnny Cueto is still not right. Now, Madison Bumgarner was fantastic in his start in this series. Tough luck loser in that one. Cueto's not right. Samardzija's not right. Derek Holland's been pitching pretty well. Chris Stratton hasn't been very good. Andrew Suarez is, you know, he doesn't really, he's solid. He's very solid, especially with the low walk rate, but he's not going to go out there and wow anybody. The Giants needed Cueto. They really needed Johnny Cueto to come back. If they wanted to make a legitimate run in the NL West or in that NL wildcard chase, they needed Cueto. They don't have him. Another rough outing here. That's a problem for them as we go forward. All right, let's recap some recent trades. We did this on Thursday's show last week, looking at some of the deals that were completed. And we'll do that again here today. And we'll talk first about Brad Brock going to the Atlanta Braves. Brock in a major funk lately, though. 4.85 ERA, 4.01 FIP, 4.36 xFIP for the season since June 24th. And he last pitched July 24th. So over that 30-day span, 9 ERA, 6.46 FIP, 4.70 xFIP, only throwing 10 innings there. The Orioles get international signing money in this deal. They get some pool money for that. Apparently, they're going to go really hard on the international route this offseason. But it's a good deal for Atlanta because they couldn't even use that money. They have restrictions because of some illegal things from John Coppola and the previous regime that was there. So they couldn't use that money anyway. So this is a good no-risk gamble to grab Brad Brock. If you get him figured out, gives you a good guy in middle relief. And you know, trade rumors can have a big impact on guys. Some guys just don't handle it real well. And you know, I saw one of the Orioles beat writers talking about Brock and you know, how he was such an approachable guy, very good for the beat writers to deal with and talk with. And you know, those are guys that are oftentimes affected the most with the trade rumors because they're comfortable where they are. They have families, they're family guys. You know, for Brock, I mean, look, at least it's, you know, July 31st and he can probably get his kids settled, but he was also a free agent. So, you know, do you move your family to Atlanta with you for 2-3 months, however long you're going to be there? You know, it's a tough thing for a lot of guys. And some guys just don't handle those trade rumors as well. For Brock, it's more than that. It's a command thing as well. But you know, some guys just don't handle that as well. So maybe the Braves, with this no-risk acquisition, do get a good depth piece in the middle of that bullpen. The Phillies picked up Asdrubal Cabrera from the Mets. The Mets grabbing some prospects there in that one. Asdrubal Cabrera reunited with Carlos Santana. They played together in the Indians system for quite some time. But Cabrera, 272 average, 323 on base, 478 slugging percentage for the season. But against righties, 277, 337, 521, a 133 WRC+. Plus. And the Phillies this year, they could use an upgraded shortstop. They're 27th in F-WAR at short, 70 WRC+. Plus. Cabrera is not a good defender. So this could hurt them a little bit when they've got ground ball pitchers on the mound. He's just not a very good defender. But they're sacrificing defense for offense. And it makes sense because when you look at their starting rotation, what's really helped them is that they've got several high strikeout guys in that rotation. Pivetta's got a good strikeout rate. Nola, Velasquez, Eflin. Maybe you protect Cabrera a little bit in Jake Arrieta starts and just use somebody else at short, kind of give Cabrera the day off. You could certainly do that. But they're sacrificing a little bit of defense for offense here, and that's not a bad play for them, given the spot that they're in right now. So Cabrera really helps this lineup against right-handed pitching. He's got good pop against righties when he's swinging from the left side. That's something that should help them as we go forward here, especially when you look at their division and you look at all the teams that are throwing righties out at them. You know, when they're trying to win some of those important division games, a lot of righties coming up on the schedule. So a good pickup there for the Phillies with Asdrubal Cabrera, who can play multiple positions, prefers to play short, can play second, can play third. But the switch hitting element, very nice for them as well. The Cubs picked up Cole Hamels. And, you know, it's I get it. You know, the Cubs need pitching, but they're really loading up on lefties here. You've already got John Lester, Mike Montgomery, and Jose Quintana. Now you get Cole Hamels as well. You look at the NL contenders against lefties. This is league-wide. This is not just NL numbers. 345 WOBA for the Rockies, that's second. 335 for the Braves is fifth. 324 for the Cardinals is ninth. 323 for the Diamondbacks is 10th. Phillies are 20th at 302. Brewers, 301, they're 21st. Dodgers have been pretty good against lefties. So, you know, it looks like a move against the Brewers maybe a little bit to try and capitalize on those head-to-head matchups. The projection systems are good for the rest of the season for Cole Hamels. He's got the strikeout rate, but the walks and the home runs have been a big problem. 23 home runs allowed already. I don't love this move for Chicago. Maybe they get Hamels figured out, but, you know, being a guy with a home run problem at Wrigley Field is very concerning. You get some of those wins, you get some warm weather still here in the month of August. I don't love this move for the Cubs. I don't think it's a really big help for them. I don't think it bolsters the rotation too much, but, you know, we'll go ahead and see how this one does wind up playing out for them overall. But again, I don't think it really moves the needle too much for me. The Brewers with a couple of moves here. They picked up Joaquin Soria, some pen depth there. And of course, you know, not a bad thing to acquire bullpen depth at this time of the year. But they also picked up Mike Moustakas. And this is a bit of a head scratcher. You know, I think the offensive profile is overrated. You know, he's a low batting average guy this season, which has dragged down his on-base percentage. Still decent power. But it's really hard for the Brewers because second base was the hole that they had. Mike Moustakas plays third base. So putting a guy out of position, whether you opt to use Travis Shaw or you use Moustakas or something like that, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. So you have to keep Jesus Aguilar at first base now because of the season that he's having, so you can't put Travis Shaw over there. But they figured the acquisition cost was worth it. They're a very smart organization. They must have figured that Moustakas or Shaw could make the transition to second base. And also, for Moustakas this year, a 233 BABIP against right-handed pitching. So if that normalizes a little bit, gets it up into the 250 range, his on-base percentage jumps up to 330, 340. You know, maybe there's some value there in that. A little bit of a head-scratcher deal. We'll see what it does for them defensively, especially because the Brewers are far and away, the highest team in defensive runs saved this year. That's been a big help to them, been a big help to that pitching staff. Now you run the risk of putting a guy out there who hasn't really played second a whole lot. I'll be very curious to see how that plays out. But again, smart organization. I have to give them the benefit of the doubt. A couple of trades for the Astros here. They pick up Martin Maldonado from Anaheim. Good catching depth. Great defensive catcher. Excellent defensive catcher. He's caught 13 of 28 would-be base stealers this year. Had 29 caught stealings last year. Grades very well as a framer. Good insurance for Max Stassi, who's not really hitting a whole lot here of late. Brian McCann still dealing with the knee injury. Savvy move. Smart, savvy move for Houston. One of the things that has been a big help for the Indians in the playoffs over the last couple of years has been their framing, has been the presentation of Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez. It makes a ton of sense to get edges wherever you possibly can come playoff time. Martin Maldonado will do that defensively for Houston. Very smart move. Not going to move the needle, not going to move the lines, not really a huge offensive impact for them, but this is a great long-term move for the playoffs. Also, they picked up Ryan Pressly to get some more bullpen depth there with that. Another move I really love is Eduardo Escobar going to Arizona. Very versatile player, a switch hitter, and he's not going to be useless on his weak side. When he's right-handed against lefties, 311 WOBA, 93 WRC+, you can live with that. You can live with that on his thin side of the platoon. Against right-handed pitching as a lefty, 382 WOBA, 141 weighted runs created plus, so 41% above league average in that split. Love that move for Arizona. Versatile player, can play infield, outfield, switch hitter. Great acquisition. Very, very strong move there for the Diamondbacks. One other one here is Jay Happ. He goes to the Yankees, and this was a move that had been talked about for quite some time, and this move is not the least bit surprising at all whatsoever. Jay Happ had been linked to the Yankees for a while. The Yankees could use some starting pitching depth, so it does make a lot of sense for them to go ahead and pick him up. Now, what I wonder about is the fit, and I talked about this on last Thursday's show because this was a move that had been rumored. Jay Happ throws a ton of fastballs, 74.1% fastball usage this year, 68.6% for his career. The Yankees have taken fastballs away from their starters a little bit. They've said, you know what, look, here's the numbers. Here's what it looks like against fastballs. Here's what it looks like against off-speed and breaking pitches. Let's throw more of these. And they've had significant success with it. Will a guy like Jay Happ be able to transition into that ideology? Or will they leave him alone? Will they give him, a guy who's in his mid-30s, the chance to just do what has worked for him? I don't know. You know, we saw his first start, and he had 78% fastball usage. So if they're going to change him, they didn't do it for the first start. But you kind of wonder here what the effectiveness of Jay Happ can be if the Yankees try to change his usage. So I'll be watching that very, very closely. I will not bet on or against him here until I see what the Yankees opt to do with that. Now, of course, Jay Happ is a guy that sets up very nicely for that opener concept, which the Rays are doing. Now, the Yankees, great bullpen depth in the playoffs. Maybe you start a reliever that can hump it up there at 96, 97. Then you go to Jay Happ, a la Ryan Yarbrough for the Rays. You know, Happ's over a strikeout per inning guy as a starter. So I like this move, but I'm very curious to see how they handle the usage patterns for Happ if they let him be himself or if they try to tweak him. And if they try to tweak him, how much of a negative impact does that have on his performance? So definitely going to be worth watching that one very, very closely here. All right, we'll run through the down the line segment very quickly because a lot of these line moves here at this point, we can guess when they're coming. We know when they're coming. You can look at the numbers and see when they're coming, but we'll run through a few of them here anyway. Big fade of Ivan Nova. That's the Pirates against the Mets on Friday. Jason Vargas going for the Mets. That's one of those, and we've seen a lot of these line moves lately here, where there's probably no rhyme or reason to it other than I can't lay X with that team. I can't lay $1.70 with the Pirates in any situation. I just can't do it. And the market agreeing with me. So, yes, the Mets are really bad. Yes, the Mets are a train wreck. They're a dumpster fire. They're a raging tire fire, whatever you want to call them. I'm still not laying $1.75 with the Pirates. And the market wasn't willing to do that either. That one came down to the minus 140 range. We are seeing a lot of those line moves here at this time of the year. Saw a big move on Carlos Carrasco and the Indians. That was against Mike Fiers and the Tigers. Up from minus 190 to minus 260. Indians clubbing Central Division foes once again. We'll keep seeing money hit the board on the Indians when they play against Central Division opponents, except for today with Shane Bieber on the mound. Saw Chris Sale money hit the board again. Up to a minus 450 favorite at my bookie, 380 to 390 a lot of other places. Chris Sale's taking money in just about every start, and the books are putting him as a minus 340 favorite in some of these outings, and it still doesn't matter. He's that good. You know, value is value, wherever you find it. We talked on Thursday about big favorites and the value with them in Major League Baseball. Apparently some value on Chris Sale. So a fade of Marcus Stroman in the Toronto Blue Jays on Friday. It was against Reynaldo Lopez and the White Sox. We had the Blue Jays in that one. They came through for us. That number came down from the minus 145 range into the minus 120s. I was unfazed by the move. I thought it was a wrong move. Turns out that it was, as the Blue Jays had a pretty solid effort in that one. So money hit the board on Chase Anderson and the Brewers against Madison Bumgarner and the Giants. Now, this is what I'm talking about from earlier on in the show, where I think people have come to the realization that the Brewers' pitchers just aren't going to regress. That focus on contact management, very important for them. Not giving up home runs. It's been working. It has been working. It's been working very, very well. Now, on the Giants side of things here, I wouldn't lay $1.55 against anybody with the Giants. Maybe the Royals, I guess. The Royals or the Orioles, something like that. Certainly not the Brewers. Certainly not the team that leads the wild card standings right now. Yeah, Madison Bumgarner is great, and he hasn't been as sharp here this season as he has been in previous seasons. And he was terrific in this start. Anderson was just good, and the bullpen for the Brewers was better. But again, it's one of those things where I think the market wasn't willing to lay 55 cents, took its chances with the Brewers, and it paid off. Saturday, we saw Luis Severino and the Yankees open a minus 435 favorite at Bookmaker, and they lost to the Royals. Many places closed this number in the 470, 480 range. My bookie was at minus 500, and they lost. Severino did not pitch well. Another start for Severino, not throwing very well. Maybe something more to that. I'm going to take a deep dive into him prior to his next outing, which should come on Wednesday or Thursday, it looks like here. But very interesting to see that number open that big. And then the Royals go out there and take care of business. So money hit the board on Miles Mikolas. That was the Cubs versus Cardinals on Saturday. And this is one of the things I'm talking about with regards to the Brewers and with some of these pitchers here where there's just a level of acceptance. You know, it's you look at the ERA to xFIP discrepancy, and it's, oh, they're overachieving, oh, regression's coming, this and that. Miles Mikolas just avoids the barrel. He avoids the fat part of the bat. He can have a lot of success and not run into regression. And this start here where he took money kind of feels like some acceptance of that point of view. They're not getting bet against as much as they previously were. So maybe we see that trend go forward a little bit here. Brewers, a flip favorite against the Giants on Saturday. That was Ulys Chacin and Johnny Cueto. They were the right side there. Brewers took some money in a few of the games in that series, and they were the right side in that Saturday matchup. Saw some money hit the Red Sox on Sunday. That was Jose Berríos against Nate Eovaldi. Eovaldi and the Red Sox winning that one comfortably. Saw money come in against Corey Kluber, and Corey Kluber only had 5 strikeouts and 6 and a third in this start against the Tigers, so he's still not fully there. But the Indians did win that one easily in the face of that line move. Zach Eflin and the Phillies took money against Luis Castillo and the Reds. Again, another one of those acceptance theory kinds of things where, you know, Castillo's taking money. He's been pitching better of late. You know, the Phillies hitting a lot of home runs here lately. Castillo has a home run problem. Maybe the books just, or maybe the market just kind of accepting that Luis Castillo may not get that much better here as we go forward. So a big fade of Sean Newcomb, and he went out and nearly spun a no-hitter against the Dodgers. We caught a piece of that one. He was up into the plus 140 range against Ross Stripling. I knew that money was coming. Wanted to wait a little bit longer on that one, obviously trying to get the article out for a lot of those Sunday afternoon games. But we hit it. We went against the grain of the line move. Caught a nice piece of that one. Saw some money on Herman Marquez. Again, I think there's a buy sign for Herman Marquez out there in the betting market. Seeing some line moves here on Monday. We got a little bit of Ivan Nova money starting to hit the board against David Price and the Red Sox. Again, shop around because we've got minus 140s out there for most of the market. Minus 150 at Bovada, minus $1.70 at my bookie. Again, these public teams like Boston, like New York, like the Patriots, like the Steelers, this and that, some books are just going to be higher. They're going to make their clients pay a higher premium. So you've got to shop around. It's so easy to see when it comes to baseball with the money line prices. It's so easy to see when it comes to football with half points and extra juice and all that kind of stuff. Got to shop around. You're doing yourself a disservice if you're not. Seeing some Irvin Santana money. I almost called him Servin Irvin, but you know he's only made one start this year, so I don't know if I can use that nickname. But Twins money against the Indians and Shane Bieber. Shane Bieber struggling with his command, giving up 4 or more runs in 5 of his 8 starts here so far. Not a big surprise to see money coming in on Minnesota in that spot. It is a little bit of a surprise to see Toronto money on Marco Estrada against Edwin Jackson and the A's. A's highest fly ball percentage in baseball, hit for a lot of power. They've hit for a ton of power lately. Estrada, extreme fly ball guy. This looks like a terrible matchup for Toronto and Estrada, but the market coming in on the Blue Jays. So we'll see how that one winds up playing out. Seeing some Brewers money hit the board on Kenta Maeda, Kenta Maeda and the Dodgers. That's Freddie Peralta in that one for Milwaukee. Not sure I'd jump in front of Maeda or the Dodgers right now, but the Brewers taking on some funds there in that one. No move yet in this one, but I do like the Astros a bit against the Mariners. Embarrassing series for the Astros against the Rangers. James Paxton, fresh off the DL, back problem, was supposed to start a few days ago. More stiffness in the back. They canceled that start. Now he's going to try to make today's start. No rehab outings. I like the Astros today with Gerrit Cole against James Paxton, the Mariners. But my favorite play today, we're seeing money come in on the Cardinals, but I like the Rockies and Tyler Anderson against the Cardinals and Carlos Martinez. Carlos Martinez coming off the DL from an oblique issue, no rehab outings. You rarely see an oblique injury take 10 days, you know, or a guy come back after 10 days. Very, very slight discomfort apparently, but still, I would have no interest in backing Martinez here tonight. Cubs, Cardinals just wrapped up. The Cardinals 4-12 in their last 16 against a team following a series against the Cubs. Same spot here. Lost on Sunday Night Baseball last night. We played this angle last Monday, caught a winner in that one on the Reds. We'll play it again here to fade the Cardinals coming off of a Cubs series. But also, Rockies are surging. The pen's in good shape. Only 19 pitches over the last 3 days for Adam Ottavino. Sung-Hwan Oh is ready to go. You know, they've got Wade Davis work back-to-back days, so maybe he's not closing today, but Ottavino can. They're in good shape with the bullpen. And I love what Tyler Anderson is doing, back to inducing ground balls over his last several starts. I'll take the Rockies here tonight at that plus money price in that Anderson versus Martinez matchup. I think it's a pretty good look there for tonight's action. And so preview the week ahead, I got 3 series to touch on, and also, of course, the trade deadline coming up tomorrow. Lots of overreactions, lots of trade talk. not seeing anything happening here as I'm doing the show today, which is good. I'm sure it'll happen right after I finish the program. But, you know, we do have some uncertainty with the trade deadline. You know, lots of overreactions from the media, narratives, all that type of stuff. Remember our discussion from last week, short-term and long-term impacts. You have to try and gauge what these deals mean in the short term, what they mean going forward. As we look ahead, pennant races, which to me officially start about mid-August or so. So again, try to evaluate the impact in the short term of all of these deals and see if it's a buy sign or a fade sign for a team. For example, if the Nationals start to sell off pieces, they're probably a fade team because that would signal to them, okay, you know, we're kind of in limbo here. I think that would be a good fade candidate, for example. But again, we'll see what Washington decides to do here with the trade deadline. A little two-gamer for the Phillies and the Red Sox. Aaron Nola, David Price tonight. Jake Arrieta, Drew Pomeranz tomorrow. Red Sox are off Wednesday and then play four with New York starting Thursday. If this was a three-game series and they played on Wednesday, I would 100% fade them on Wednesday unless Chris Sale was on the mound. Drew Pomeranz coming back from a long layoff. I think Jake Arrieta is a buy candidate. I may take a shot with this one because I think Philadelphia is probably in the plus 160-ish range for this one. So I will consider taking a shot there, but you know, wouldn't be a big piece at all by any means. But for Pomeranz coming off the long layoff, you know, I don't love guys like that. Astros and Mariners. Gerrit Cole, James Paxton tonight. Charlie Morton, Mike Leake on Tuesday. Dallas Keuchel, Wade LeBlanc on Wednesday. Per Pythagorean win-loss, Houston is 21 games better than Seattle. Again, Pythagorean win-loss, a standings metric based on run differential. Houston is 21 games better than Seattle in that department. Seattle's a sub-500 team. Houston, I think, is 73-44. I don't know, something, some absurd record. They have some crazy-ass record in Pythagorean win-loss, but they are 21 games better in that alternate standings metric. Seattle, a 10-game overachiever so far on the season based on Pythagorean win-loss. Do we see that show up in this series? The Mariners are only four games back, but they've dropped 12 of 19. They've hit some of that regression. Astros, maybe looking ahead to this series, overlooking the Rangers. Do they put a stamp on this thing? Do they put a couple of games of distance, you know, in this thing from this year? Do they get the sweep? You know, do they pick up one game by going 2-1? I think tonight's spot is a good one for them. I think tomorrow's spot is a good one for them. I don't know about Wednesday because Dallas Keuchel has, you know, had some ups and downs here a little bit, but I think they're in good spots tonight and tomorrow. So I think the Astros probably do widen that gap a little bit, and you know, we'll see if that thing, you know, really does widen out throughout the rest of the season. One more series to hit on here. That's the Brewers and the Dodgers rematch of the series that happened right after the All-Star break. Freddy Peralta, Kenta Maeda tonight. Wade Miley, Walker Buehler Tuesday. Chase Anderson, Rich Hill on Wednesday. Yulis Chacin, Clayton Kershaw on Thursday. This is a tough spot for the Brewers, I think. The Dodgers are playing very well. This is just not a series where I would be interested in backing the Brewers. We're seeing money on them tonight. I don't think we see money on them tomorrow. I don't know if we see it Wednesday or Thursday either because they've not been very good against left-handed pitching with Hill and Kershaw, you know, kind of rounding into form here, Kershaw particularly. I think it's a tough spot for the Brewers. I think the Dodgers are in very good shape here in this series too. Maybe widen that gap a little bit in the National League West. So, talking about a lot of things here on today's show. Lots of stuff going on at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check out everything that we have to offer over there. We're very excited about everything that's going on. And, of course, our lead-up content for the football seasons. And we will have a Hall of Fame game preseason preview here this week. And then we'll also preview some of the preseason games throughout the month of August as well. And then we'll have picks and previews on every college football and NFL game over the course of the season. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the better's box.